Hey, welcome back to ATI Auto Transport on the move, as it were. Mic check 1, 2, 3. Let's make sure you can see me and hear me okay. Please do jump in the live chat and say hello. Thank you guys so much. Yes, it's Wednesday. It's DOT compliance on the move. So, without any further ado, let's go ahead and jump into. Okay, so we've got Brian Riker. You can see me and hear me okay, Brian?
Yes, I can, Jay. That was a very short
You
introduction,
know
not your
what?
normal 2 minutes.
Well, I tell you what, and I'm glad you said that because I've noticed that I've had a very long introduction for a long time, but I don't think we need it anymore. The people here, they know, and if you're new, you just want us to get right to it, right? I had a YouTube comment. This guy's like,
Sure.
"Why you've got like a 5 minute intro?" I'm like, all right, fine." So, and we also have with us here, we have Ty Thompson out in the parking lot. Ty, can you see us and hear us? Okay, there he is. Wow, it's like an
Jay,
Easter egg hunt. What's up?
where did Ty come from? He's in
Where
the
did
transport parking lot.
Ty is on
Oh,
DOT compliance on the move in the transport parking lot. All right, so we had a weird show last night. Something happened to the router. I don't know what happened, but we do have Silver Mint is here with us. Silver Mint might be like one of the hardest core ATI fans right now.
thank you for
We
being
heard
here,
you replaced
Silverman.
Carlos. Right? Yeah, Carlos, he'll be here.
Yeah, we love you.
We love you, Carlos. So I'm going to get into some industry news here first, but Brian, let's start with you. What is going on, Brian?
Well, glad you asked, Jay. I happen to be 100 foot from Ty here in Kansas City because I was in Green Valley, Missouri this morning interviewing for OOIDA Landline Now radio program. I represent the Towing and Recovery Association of America, and it's unusual when OOIDA and the towing industry can see eye to eye on something, but we've joined together in a coalition to fight this renewed proposal for speed limiters on commercial vehicles. It affects us as professional drivers and makes our job unsafe because we're slowing in the way when we're speed limited. It makes it dangerous for motorists on the road. But when I put my hat on as towing industry, it makes it dangerous for my guys to get out of the tow truck on the shoulder of the road because, as the audience knows, we have a slow down move over responsibility in all 50 states. But if you have an impenetrable wall of trucks moving at some arbitrary speed between 60 and 68 miles an hour, they're not going to be able to slow down as one cohesive unit without causing problems, nor could they move over because nobody's going to want to let that slow-moving truck out in front of them. So this is a major safety issue for pedestrian workers on our roadway. And OOIDA was gracious enough to allow the towing industry to come and do a 14-minute segment on their program that airs live tonight on 146, the Road Dog, Sirius XM, or on the podcast will be available by tomorrow morning. And tune in and listen to it if you want to learn a little more about the towing industry. And you should learn about this speed limiter mandate because right now there's a public comment period on regulations.gov that is only open till June 3rd. So get your comments in there on why this is a bad idea. Stay professional, stay respectful. They've got 12 specific questions they want to ask. If you want to learn more about that, tune in to last week's episode of On the Road with Your DOT Guy podcast, where I broke down the 12 questions and what they really mean. But go ahead and get your comments in there about why this is a bad idea.
I'm looking up right now where you can comment. So I'm
Right,
not, yeah.
regulations.gov.
Okay.
Then in the search bar, you type in FMCSA hyphen 2022 hyphen 0004, and that should bring you to their most current speed limiter proposal. If not, on regulations.gov, you can search by agency, FMCSA activity in the last 30 days, and just scroll through the menu. There's a lot of routine stuff on there, like vision waivers, hearing waivers, but you will see the speed limiter proposal in there. But it's docket FMCSA hyphen 2002 hyphen 0004.
2002 hyphen.
And zero 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 should be four.
Let me try this again. 2002 and then hyphen.
Then hyphen 0004.
Okay, let's see if I got this. Because I do want to find it. Because I'm right now replicating what it could be like to try to find this. You know, that's one of the hard things. You want to comment.
Yes, exactly.
Well, where do you go? I mean, how many hyphens and how many zeros, right? And it's
sure.
You know, I'm honestly,
if you have trouble finding it.
Yeah, I can't find it.
If you have trouble finding it on the Landline Now website, they have a link to make your comments through their Fighting for Truckers webpage. On the show notes for On the Road with your DOT guy, Brian Riker podcast for episode 16, there is the link to file comments. And yeah, it is important for us to figure this out so that the average person can file the comments.
Well, I agree with you. That's why I'm trying to find some links here. I found a link on Landline that might work. I'm going to go to your podcast now. What show was that?
And it should be episode 16. I forget what it was titled, but I talk about speed limiters and a couple other things on it.
All right. Well, we're here to help. So, and on that, when you talked to WIDA, you covered information on speed limiters. Because it seems is it counterintuitive? It sounds like a
absolutely
great idea, but not a great idea, and the public doesn't know that, right?
It's not a great idea at all. No, they don't know that, and the reason it's not a great idea: studies show that traffic is safest when everybody moves at the same speed. Slower speed doesn't necessarily mean you're safer. We need even speed between cars and large trucks. Further, it looks like there's a speed problem with truck-involved crashes because on the accident report, there's a checkbox for failure to reduce speed to avoid a crash. And that's a catch-all, what the cops use to say what happened. And although it's not true, or although it is true, what they don't understand is that most of these crashes happen well below the posted regulatory speed for the stretch of highway. And so speed limiting will do nothing to prevent those crashes. In a few rare incidences where a truck rear ends somebody, a speed limiter might reduce the severity of the crash if they can only do 68 instead of 75, but it's not going to prevent crashes. In fact, FMCSA's own research shows that it's going to increase rear-end collisions of large trucks where motorists that are not subject, so cars that are not subject to the speed limiter rule, will come upon a slow-moving truck and have nowhere to go and will rear-end it. That's going to increase. And if you've ever seen a rear-end collision between a car and a typical van trailer, it is not a pretty sight. The car normally ends up all the way under the trailer to about the headrest. So you can imagine what happens there. This is an awful idea that safety advocate groups think will help, and it's really a solution in search of a problem that does not exist.
Well, I'll tell you what, and I'll just say this too, as you know this, is that traffic is moving fast, faster than the speed limit oftentimes. And then there's that one person who may be a new driver, I don't know what it is, and they're doing like 20 miles less than everybody, and it is a hazard to try to get around them.
Absolutely. And now we're going to take 3.5 million commercial vehicles that are on the highway and make them all that same rolling hazard. And I'm not picking on any one particular major motor carrier, but it's like rolling up upon some of these mega carriers that we know tell their drivers to run at 57 miles an hour to conserve fuel. Now that fuel is $5 and $6 a gallon again, I'm seeing this particular carrier. I just drove out from Pennsylvania to Kansas City this week, and I came across at least three dozen of this particular carrier's trucks back to running 57 miles an hour. And it was downright scary the way other people were coming up on them so fast, not realizing how slow they're going. I was, because I know that carrier does this, but the other motorists were not taking appropriate time to look far enough ahead and then react. They were reacting last second and making dangerous moves into the other lane. And this is going to become an everyday occurrence if every commercial vehicle on the road is speed limited. And I want our audience to fully understand, In the proposal in 2016, they were only talking about vehicles that required a CDL for this. Question number 12 on this current proposal is, should this be expanded to include class 3 through 6, which means any vehicle 10,001 pounds or greater. So your dually pickup truck that you use sometimes for work, sometimes for personal play, will be speed limited. Your plumber and electrician van will be speed limited. Your hotshot pickup truck and two-car trailer will be speed limited. And there is no reason for this.
Your autonomous vehicle will be speed limited. Okay, Jay.
Well, your autonomous vehicle is naturally speed limited to the posted speed limit. And I could almost be okay with that if we had a cushion above and a variable speed limit with a cushion above whatever the posted speed is for the area we're in, not just some arbitrary one size fits all 62 to 68 mile an hour speed when we have 75 and 80 mile an hour roadways in this nation today.
What are you thinking, Ty? What do you want to add?
I don't know what Ty's thinking.
I'm trying to figure out how did we get to the place where we need the government to tell us what to do and how to run our businesses. That's what I can't get past.
Because we've allowed it with the crop of people that we have elected to represent us and the people that they appoint to be heads of these agencies. And the magic, and I am not anti-safety. Everybody that knows me knows I own a safety and compliance consulting company. I believe firmly in being safe when we do our job. But the magic word of safety trumps everything, and we're allowed to put people out of business or make it unprofitable to do business in the name of safety. And that is ridiculous, but it's because of who we've elected in the last 30 years to represent us that this is the way they feel. So this is the direction that the country and therefore the industry are being compelled to go in. This is why legislative advocacy is so important.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%.
I'll tell you what.
And also, sorry, Jay, one more thing. Isn't this week or next week the CVS push?
It's right now. The CVSA, Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance. You need a cough button, dude.
Well, actually, I have
one. It is this week, right now, Ty.
I have one for the
audience.
Back
home in your studio.
I have one for the audience, but not for you. Hey, let me ask you something. Hey, CVS, because somebody said in the beginning, Chevron. Wait a minute. The Blitz is on? Is the Blitz
yes,
on?
Yes, it is. The Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance Operation Road Check started at midnight yesterday and concludes at midnight tomorrow night. So their focus is on wheel end safety this year, which means they're going to be looking at tires, brakes, wheel bearings, wheel studs, condition of your rims, and anything else there. But that doesn't mean that's all they're going to look at. They will also look at paperwork, logbooks, registration, lights, and all other safety equipment. They're focused on doing the level one North American standard inspection, which is a 37-point inspection procedure that inspects truck, trailer, cargo, paperwork, driver fitness and health, and everything related to safe operation of a commercial vehicle. And this is a targeted enforcement throughout all of North America. The FMCSA and their partners at the state and local level, as well as the provincial governments of Canada and the Ministry of Transportation and Communication in Mexico, participate during this program to cover the entire North American continent.
Hey, while we're on this stuff, Brian, I've got the bet you can't stump Brian up because we have questions in the live chat. So let's get to a few of them. What we've got here is, let's see, if I'm running PC with personal property, am I required to go through the scales?
You're always required to go through the scales if you're in a commercial vehicle. When you are on personal conveyance, you're allowed to use it as a personal vehicle. But whatever the sign says, if it says all trucks, all commercial vehicles, you still follow it. And if you read the guidance to personal conveyance, it even clearly states in there that you're still subject to rules such as not driving when fatigued. You still have to log on duty during your personal conveyance time whenever you're servicing or conditioning your motor vehicle. So putting fuel in it, windshield washer fluid, wiping the windows or anything like that. And the guidance to personal conveyance does clearly state that the officer is allowed to conduct a routine commercial vehicle inspection even when you're in personal conveyance. In fact, the guidance tells you that if that happens and you're flagged for an inspection, you must log on duty, not driving, during the time of the inspection. This is why personal conveyance can be troublesome when you're trying to PC during a 34-hour reset or your 10-hour off-duty period, both of which are legal. But should you need to put fuel in the truck or you get flagged for a random inspection, you just interrupted that required 10-hour or 34-hour break, and it starts over from the moment that you're allowed to log back off duty.
So I want to say hello to Danny B in the live chat. Carlos ACB Logistics is here too. All right, Danny has a question. Danny says, what happens when I get called for a drug test, but I'm not in the country and I won't be there for a month?
Well, you just failed your drug test because whoever called you for it should not have reached out to you. You have to immediately report to an FMCSA approved lab. There are no exceptions to this. So if you're not going to be in the country for a month, you need to remove yourself from the random pool. And then when you return to the country and you return to duty, you must take a pre-employment test. If it's been more than 30 days, you've been removed from the pool. Whenever you are in the pool, you report for a drug test. Alcohol testing can only be done just before you go on duty, well on duty, or immediately after you come off duty. But drug testing, if whoever your designated employer representative is, the person that gets the notice from the consortium, if they make contact with you, then you must immediately report for that drug test at the nearest available facility, regardless of whether you're off duty, on vacation, or otherwise indisposed. Otherwise, it's reported as a failure to test. And there's very little wiggle room or exception to that. Now, if your consortium is doing it right, unless you're just a one person and the consortium just randomly contacts you, you don't have another person in your family that's aware of what you do that can take that phone call. If your consortium is doing it right, they let your designated employer representative, which could be your wife, your brother, your cousin, somebody that works for you, just not you, they let you know that, hey, he has 30 or 60 day window you have to send them for this test. Because the way it works, your random pool draw is at the beginning of each quarter among everybody that's in the pool. And then they have that entire 90 day period to actually complete the test. Most consortiums dole them out. They divide it by three and dole them out every 30 days to their participants. Some will tell you at the beginning of the period that in the next 90 days you have to go, but they can't tell you, the driver, that directly. They can only tell your dispatcher or manager, which causes a conundrum for owner operators, because if you're not married or anything like that, you may not have anybody to receive notice. And then in that case, when your consortium is acting as your employer representative, you have to go the moment they tell you. So if you know you're going to be out of country for an extended period of time and unable to comply, you need to notify your consortium to remove you from the pool. And if you're removed from the pool more than 30 days, you have to take a return, a pre-employment when you come back. That was long-winded, but I wanted to cover it all in there.
Well, you covered it. Yeah. So my follow-up question is going to be, all right, so let's say you're a single owner operator. How do you get a consortium, by the way?
There's hundreds of them across the country. It's a service I will be launching through Fleet Compliance Solutions in the next couple of months, but I'm just not there yet. But you can join a trade association such as OOIDA. Their business services department has an excellent, well-run drug and alcohol testing consortium and program that also does all the required driver and management education and everything else that goes with it. Or you can check with your local occupational medicine provider. Places like Concentra and MedExpress, they have nationwide consortiums that are DOT compliant, and some of them will take on the single owner operator. Some don't. They want a fleet before they'll talk to you. And there are other companies, competitors of mine, such as Foley Services, that offer a managed drug and alcohol consortium. Just buyer beware, be careful of what you buy, because some of them have jacked up fees or fine print in the contract. Probably the most direct one out there is the one CMCI, which is administered by OOIDA. It's $45 a year to be a member of the trade association, and then it's like $100 a year to be in the consortium program. And so it's very cost effective.
And the drug consortium is a requirement separate and connected to the clearinghouse?
Correct. And reminder, all of these only apply to CDL drivers that are expected to use their CDL in the course of their job. So if you are a CDL driver, but you're driving a non-CDL truck and you will never drive a CDL truck for your employer, drug testing is not required. If you are a CDL driver driving a CDL truck, even as an owner operator, then drug testing is mandatory. And if you are a owner driver, meaning you are the one that still drives as well, then you must, by regulation, be in a consortium. If you own your own fleet, you can do all this yourself in-house without a consortium. I still don't recommend it, because you're required to test 50% of your pool. And so you'll be sending, if you've got a fleet of 10, you'll be sending 5 of your drivers for drug tests every quarter. And that's just crazy cost prohibitive. You put your drivers in a consortium pool with 10,000 other drivers, and you may have to send one driver a year to a test, if that. And so it's a fixed fee. You know what you're paying, and it doesn't disrupt your operations and dispatch. Because once you know you got to send that driver, you got to figure out how to get him to a lab without telling him where he's going, and then get him to a lab to take the test. And that may interfere with your run. And remember, while they're reporting for a drug test, that is on duty time. So you don't want to do it where it's going to interfere with their 10 or 34 hour break or anything like that. It is burdensome to do it yourself in-house. That's why I recommend a consortium, even for small to mid-sized fleets. Once you got about 100, 150 guys of your own, then it probably makes sense to manage your own in-house pool.
Ty, do you sometimes listen to and you think, man, when do we haul stuff?
Well, yeah. Judging by this transporter lot, there's nothing to haul right now.
Yeah, everybody's at the drug consortium.
Great segue into next topic. But no, there are things that are important, I understand. But, you know, just standing here and thinking about it, the reason Brian and I were talking earlier before the show, I always outsourced all my DOT stuff just simply because it made me angry. And angry to the point where it would actually affect my focus and my goal for today, the week, the month. So it's ridiculous to see, you know, and then you start getting into all these scams that are out here that are available to take advantage of the guy who's just trying to get a truck and a trailer and provide for his family. You know, these people call the scams, the load board scams, the broker scams, the dispatch scam. I mean, they're all out there. And that's one of the reasons I really appreciate Brian and Brian letting me come on the show today, and Jay's platform ATI, is because there's a better way to do business, guys. And that's what ATI is here for. This is the Car Shipping Business Channel. We talk about these things like Brian's talking about. I mean, I could stand here and probably fall asleep literally standing in the transport parking lot, but it's really important to pay attention to this stuff. And it's really important to have a guy like Brian, or Brian's available for you to deal with this stuff, so that you can focus on things like the transport parking lot. And why is it empty on sale day?
Exactly. Learn your industry and learn the trends that are going on so that you can make the best business choices possible. And sometimes the right choice is outsourcing a segment that you're not the expert on. But please, Ty touched on something here. Don't fall for the scams. I get them in my inbox all the time, and I am a consultant for compliance companies, and I will name them by name, and hopefully you don't get pissed off at me, Jay, but DOT Compliance Group, they are one of the most brutal, scumbag, slimy solicitation companies out there. I see emails from them daily from my customers where they are trying to sell you stuff you can do for free, sell you stuff that doesn't even need to be done. I'll no sooner do a biennial update for a client and they'll get an email from DOT Compliance Group saying that their biennial update is due and their DOT number is suspended and they need to renew and it's only $199.95, click right here. If you have that type of action button in the email, it is not from the FMCSA, it is not official, it is a scumbag solicitor. Block the email address and put it in the trash.
Wow. You know what's cool?
It's a hot topic for me.
But what I love is your passion. I mean,
passion.
And I put Brian's website and email in the live chat. And I did that saying, if you really want to get, let's say, because you just heard that, you're like, man, who can I trust? What you can do is you can email Brian any question on air at yourdotguide.com. It's in the live chat. And get ready to read a book. Yeah, get your pillow and your nappy because it's going to put you to sleep.
Do we have a discount code for my pillow?
Yeah, exactly.
You need one.
Oh, you do. Man, I love that. It's amazing. Yeah.
And guys, I promise you, you won't get the sales pitch. I've been told I give away too much of my services for free. I don't mind answering your questions. I love to talk. I spend a lot of time on the road. So a lot of this I do with my Blue Parrot XTS headset while I'm driving down the road. No cost, no harm, no foul. But that said, I do have for the owner operator, a $195 a month subscription model that if you want to be guaranteed, you're going to get an answer from me and an answer that's defensible in court, one that I can stand behind, because if you're not a retained client, I can only give you general guidance, not binding advice, just like your attorney or your CPA. And I may know this stuff, but make it clear, I am not a practicing attorney. So this is not legal advice, and we're not engaged in legal advice on this show. But if you do retain me with the subscription model, then I can give you binding regulatory guidance, advice, and DOT compliance and safety. And it's $195 a month for the small owner operator, 1 to 2 trucks. And then we step up according to your fleet size. And I have services where I can look at your ELDs and even give you guidance and file data queue challenges for you. You get an inspection and you don't think it was right, I will walk you through it. I'm a member of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, so I get the same information that the enforcement partners get. And I'll walk you through the process where the officer was right, wrong, indifferent, what your driver could have done to make it better, what your driver did to make it worse, and do we have a chance to data queue challenge this and get it amended or removed from your record? And that right there can be invaluable because your insurance carrier and a good reputable broker or shipper is going to look at your CSA score to see if you're a safe company.
You know, Brian, you just made me think, and that, because we talked about like updating the title of this show, this program, this segment. And I think what you just said, you were right. There's a title in there. And so we'll be working on that because this is a,
sure,
this is incredible advice. I love what we're doing here.
This is a lot more than compliance.
Oh yeah, no, this is.
Well, here's the thing.
Advice.
So with this $195 a month, I promise you it's worth it times 12. And here's why. This is a real life story, Brian, that you know. There's a guy down in Scottsdale. He wanted to be a car hauler. I talk about him all the time. Harrison Stone.
I talked to him yesterday.
Yeah. Brian doesn't know that Harrison and I talked. Harrison called me actually this morning, and he's telling me, there, I'm back. Okay. Sorry.
That's all good.
He's telling me that Brian saved his rear end out of the ticket, right? So it works. Brian's as legit as it comes. And basically what I'm saying is here's what I really like about Brian. You pay him the $195 a month. His goal is to get you to not pay him. Did you know
yes.
that? So it's not forever unless you just want to. But the reality of it is, especially starting out, Brian will tell you, they're going to come. They're going to come knocking on your door and they're going to want to do it. And, you know, we're here to help you audit, which it's really here $2,000 to walk out. Right?
Yeah.
It might be more now. It was always $2,000 when I started. Anytime they show up, minimum $2,000. So 195 is a way better deal. I promise.
And I will tell you, out of all of my clients, with the exception of a handful that just will refuse to follow advice and do whatever they want, no matter what, my clients generally get a satisfactory rating or no rating at all, which is better than conditional or a substandard rating on their new entry audit. And they generally walk away with no fines and no violations discovered because I look at all your paperwork and we do a mock audit before you submit anything to the auditor to make sure that it is the I's are dotted, T's are crossed. And going back to Harrison for a minute, I've worked with him for a couple of years now. And what you were alluding to, Ty, was a data queue challenge where an officer in California, when he had a pickup truck and hotshot trailer, cited him for not having safety chains. Sounds like a big deal. The problem is his truck was equipped with a kingpin fifth wheel hitch, not a gooseneck ball. Safety chains are not a requirement on a kingpin fifth wheel hitch. This was an out of service violation that was going to cost Harrison about $15,000, $20,000 extra in his insurance for the year on insurance renewal. And I was able to successfully data queue it, get California to admit they were incorrect, get it removed from his record so that he didn't have to pay that $15,000 or so insurance increase. And that's why having someone that understands this and not just rolling over and playing dead and saying it is what it is and move on is a great asset to a business. And I don't care if it's me or if it's somebody else, but you need to, if you don't understand all this stuff, you need someone to help. I mean, even attorneys get help from other attorneys when it's not in their area of expertise. So it's very important to have that knowledge base in your corner wherever you get it from.
We got some cool stuff happening in the live chat here. I want to say Devin says, hey, first 3 weeks out on the road seems to be a success. Short haul, big dollar.
That's good, awesome. Devin. Yeah. It's a tough time to get started, man. I'm glad you're doing well.
That is cool stuff. Tommy Whitmore, he's in the live chat. And, yep, they're talking about the Blitz and working for, you know, clients, direct running lanes. Very cool stuff. Danny B., I have used Brian in the past, and I can confirm there is no better man for the job. Wow, that's awesome. Glowing recommendation.
Thank you, Danny. I'm humbled. Thank you.
Let's do some news. We tried to stump Brian and we failed.
Hey, it's happened before. I need to make a little plastic stump paperweight that we can mail out to the people that successfully get me.
You get to win the stump, right?
That's a marketing tool there. It'll come with my phone number engraved in it and a free month.
Ooh, that's a great idea. It'd be like a paperweight that could sit on your dash or your desk.
Yes.
And it has your phone number on it, and it's a stump. I love it.
It's better than someone else told me I should make a Brian bobblehead to go on the dashboard, shaking my head no, 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 so you think twice about going past the scale.
It's actually a pretty good idea, too. I like that idea. Dwayne on the this was an email. Do I need IFTA if I'm running a two-car hauler set up non-CDL?
No. Moving on. Here's why. Here's why. IFTA and apportioned registration. IFTA specifically, because apportioned, there are a few exceptions. IFTA only applies to qualified vehicles. The definition of a qualified vehicle is a commercial vehicle with a gross vehicle weight or weight rating in excess of 26,000 pounds. Or three axles or more. So if you're running non-CDL, you do not exceed 26,000 pounds. And they don't count three axles with your pickup truck. It's three axles on the power unit. So you don't have a tandem axle pickup truck. So you're not included there. So no fuel tax decal is required if you're non-CDL. There are a few states that would require an apportioned registration because they apportion vehicles as low as 10,000 pounds. But if you're not based in their state, generally you don't need that.
And so if you don't have a CDL, no IFTA. If you don't have a CDL, no clearinghouse. But you could still, you're still going to, that doesn't mean no ELD.
Right. Correct. ELD applies to anything that meets the definition of a commercial vehicle in part 390. Not 390.5. Right. It's anyhow, 10,001 pounds or up. I normally can quote that section right off the top of my head, and I just stumbled.
Wow.
And Ty can verify. I've got no notes over here. I'm standing here leaning on a rental car.
What? He's flipping through books in the parking lot. Short answer is no. Let's see. There is the answer, by the way. There's proof that Brian will answer your question. And actually, that'd be one of the shorter answers, but it's specific and to the point. Let's see what else we got here.
An easy question.
All right. So let's talk. Let's get ugly. this is right up Ty's alley. We're going to get into Dieselgeddon here for a minute. Good morning. This is on a guy's phone. Good morning. Effective immediately. Make sure you're fueling up at the end of the day. Everybody feel that way right now? Do you feel this way right now?
It's a tough call. I have two trains of thought on this. I understand why that email went out because I get the alerts from the Pilot Flying J and the Petro TA fuel networks on fuel price changes. And with the market so volatile that it can jump 7-10 cents or more overnight. If you know it's going to go up, obviously you want to get every penny of cheap fuel in your truck as possible. If you fuel up at night and it went down, you just lost money. So you're playing the market. You're playing the fuel market.
Ooh,
the other problem with fueling up at night right now is with $5, $6, $7 a gallon fuel. If you have a large truck, you may have 150, 200 gallons of fuel on board. So you just filled up and you dropped $1,500 or $3,000 into your tank. You go inside to take a shower. Somebody watched you fuel up because they know trucks are fueling up at night, and they siphon your tanks out in the 30 minutes you're inside taking a shower, and they just stole $3,000 from you. That's enough to be grand larceny in every state, but good luck in catching them. And so my practice and my recommendation for my drivers always was fuel in the morning before you leave. That way you're not leaving a truck with full tanks while you go in to have your meal, your shower, do recreation, whatever you're doing while you're away from the truck. Or you set yourself up for theft. And you can put locking fuel caps on there, but what people don't realize is most of these locking fuel caps, there's only three or four keys to fit that little cam lock in there. So they're nothing to unlock. When I had the towing company, I carried a ring of keys, and most of the time we could unlock the truck door, the fuel cap, the trailer hitch ball, whatever the lock was, with just a handful of keys. So that doesn't help you. Anti-siphon devices don't help you, because I've seen some guys that are brutal enough that they'll poke a hole in your aluminum tank with a brass center punch and stuff a hole right down in there if you make the cap too hard to steal fuel from. So, well, I understand the sentiment of fueling at night to hedge your bet on rising fuel costs. You have to consider the area of the country you're in, the likelihood of theft, and or the likelihood that fuel prices might trend downward overnight.
By the way, quick question. I just want to ask this. What's the rule again on strapping? How many straps do you need on a vehicle when you're strapping it? Two, right? Is it opposite corners? Is that the rule?
If it's a wheeled vehicle weighing 10,000 pounds or less, a minimum of two properly rated tie downs must be used, and they must be deployed in a fashion to prevent forward, rearward, lateral, and vertical movement, which means the car can't rock forward, backward, left, right, up, or down. And to accomplish that, you must be able to secure 50% of the static weight of the vehicle. So if you roll a 3,800 pound Chevy Equinox on your trailer. Together, those two straps have to, they each have to be rated for at least 15 or 1600 pounds to, well, it'd be 17 or 18 to add up to that 3,800. That is bare minimum. And yes, to accomplish that, they must be deployed on opposite corners, left front, right front, left rear, whatever. However, industry standard is a 4-point means of securement. So all four tires or four corners of the vehicle are secured. And that would then give you, with your average load strap here, more than double the actual static weight, not just half of the static weight, to meet the requirements of cargo securement. Since our straps are rated somewhere between 1,500 and 4,700 pounds, depending upon manufacturer. And if you don't use industry standard, you may be legal. But should a car fall off or a car dislodge in an accident, I'll eat you alive as the expert witness for the attorney, because you know what industry standard is. Like I say all the time, just because you're compliant does not mean you're safe. And that goes both ways. Some regulations we comply with actually are anti-safety and make us dangerous out there, but we must comply with them because they're regulation. But also, if you only comply to the bare minimum of the standard, that doesn't make you safe. That just makes you the bottom 10%.
All right, go with four if you can. Ty, what were you going to say, buddy?
The fuel deal. Read that again, would you, real quick? You just read the headline.
Is there more to it? So, okay, here we go. Due to historically low supply, diesel availability in the eastern U.S. market is currently limited. Your drivers could start to see the effects of these supply issues in the coming days. We expect to have locations experiencing temporary intermittent diesel outages. We expect the below states to be impacted the most by these supply shortages. Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania. I think there's more.
Yeah, see, now I understand what Brian's saying, and I agree 100%. But I think what we're seeing here, Brian, I'm going to go ahead and just say it. This is what we're going to call dieselgeddon.
Yes.
Armageddon, but dieselgeddon. And I suspect it's fill up because there may not be any fuel in the morning. If you want to get to wherever you think you're going, you better get it now.
Well, that is absolutely correct. And in those markets where they know that there are shortages, you definitely want to make sure you have enough fuel to get out of the affected area, even if it means purchasing it at a less than desirable price or location. Don't roll into those areas low on fuel and count on getting fueled up. That is absolutely correct. And so for you guys with the hot shots, I feel really, really sorry right now, because with the smaller fuel tanks, you're going to have no choice but fuel up more often and possibly have supply issues. Now, the good news is it seems that the diesel supply issues are limited to the large major retailers and your smaller stations. And so with the hot shot, you may have to struggle, but you can get your pickup truck into most smaller retailers that have diesel. I haven't witnessed any shortages with them yet. And remember your mom and pops. They have a whole different supply network than the big guys, so they may have fuel when the other guys don't. Don't get so hung up on, I have to buy it here to get my discount, that when it's not available, you overlook the other station, the next exit up, that has plenty of fuel because none of the big fleets get steered into their parking lot.
So Sinclair and Vero. Huh? Okay.
Well, be careful with Valero, since they're the Russian oil company.
Is that right? I didn't know that. Uh-oh. They have the oligarch special, I hear. Okay, that's allegedly.
You say that word so eloquently. On-highway motor fuels they create, even if they worked at $0 profit, it's only going to make a couple cents per gallon difference. If they put 100% of their record profits back into reducing the pump price of diesel fuel and gasoline, they produce so much quantity in that quarter that it's only a couple cents. If I wish I had my notes here, I did the math on this for an article I wrote a couple of weeks ago, and it worked out to, depending upon the product and the supplier, between 1.5 and 5 cents a gallon price is what their profit is. So they're not making this huge profit when expressed as a percentage of their gross sales, they're just like the rest of us in the trucking world working on a 1-5% profit margin.
Ty,
it just sounds big when it's $200 billion.
Ty, I know you've spent some time on this, and we're going to do a show on it. So tell me more of what you see and hear on your end with, when it comes to Dieselgeddon.
Well, you kind of caught me off guard. But whatever Brian's saying, he's right. And I don't think it's going to get any better.
Well, all right. I'll tell you what. Then we'll come back to that.
That's okay. So we can. Yeah. I want to sandbag that one because I need a heads up, by the way, when we're doing that show. Because
I don't know when we're doing it either.
See that? Well, if we have Wi-Fi, right?
Right.
Well, that's when we'll do it.
Right. Wi-Fi. Exactly. It's Wi-Fi again.
No. One of the reasons that I was really excited that Brian reached out to us is because Brian and I. My phone may die here we go. I'm still there. Okay.
Okay.
There's some big news in the car dealer world, Jay. I'm sure you've already heard about it, but Carvana's in trouble again, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I got that in the news. Yeah.
We'll get there. But so Brian reaches out, hey guys, I'm like, yay. Awesome. I love Brian. And so I said, let's meet up here at Manheim, Kansas City, transport parking lot, and we'll do the show in the parking lot. Okay. So we get here at separate times, and I'm familiar with the place. So I go up front, and I run into two dealers that I've known forever. And I just start asking, hey, how you been? Great. Is the sale open? Do they let you come in and buy? Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, how did it work out for you when they closed it and you couldn't come in? Do you have that beep button that beeps out bad words available?
No, but this is a carrier show. So
it's a carrier show. So
people wouldn't
feel
good if there weren't cuss words. Yeah. So
by the way, okay. Not just dealer. Let me quantify that. It's a Ford dealer. Okay. I've done business with him for 15, 20 years. Great guy, small town Ford guy. He comes to Manheim because Manheim has a contract with Ford Motor Credit. Ford Motor Credit runs cars through the sale. He's been buying cars at Manheim, Kansas City for probably the last 30 years. Every Wednesday he's here. I promise you the dude is here every Wednesday, right? Hey, can you see my camera? Watch this.
Yeah.
Look who's pulling in. Look, watch. Can you see it?
Yeah.
Here it comes.
Look, a union guy full of Ford turnbacks.
Why is he here?
Because they don't have enough new car freight to keep the truck full, so they'll pick up the lease turnbacks.
Did you guys see that? This is why I love the transport parking lot. You see stuff and then you start asking questions. I love it. So I'm talking to the dealer in the parking lot in the car, and he starts going full tilt sideways on how much he's disappointed that the auctions closed the doors, fell for the COVID deal, da 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 da. And they were looking for opportunity here. They got it. Okay, great, buddy. I'm glad you're upset. Me too. But let me ask you, did you buy cars online during that time? Yeah, but I hated it. Okay, you're going to buy cars online again? Nope. Well, do you think that that's a possibility? Like they could probably pull that off again, right? Well, if they do, I'm selling my dealership. I'm done. I've had it. Okay. So that's one guy, Ford guy. Next guy I bump into, Chrysler Dodge Jeep guy. Hey, buddy, how's it going? Haven't seen you in a while. Yeah. I didn't know they still let people in the auction. Yeah, there wasn't very many. How many cars they run today? I don't know, maybe 800. Any dealers out there? No. Could you buy anything? No. Why? Prices are too high. Well, if there's nobody there and there's cars, how come you can't buy it? They have protects. They're not selling it for less than this. So I'm the high bidder and I still don't get the car because of the protect. So where am I going with all this? And what about Carvana, right? And this is why I'm happy that Brian's here with us, because Brian and I have actually had a couple phone calls about this. And the big news, do you have that article, Jay, the big latest problem with Carvana?
Yeah, let's bring that up here. I got to get through. I had Dieselgeddon. There's the fun U-Haul story. Let's see, speed limiters. Boy, we got so much stuff here. Okay, Carvana is stock is down. Yeah, then they laid off 2,500 employees. What was that, last week?
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was brutal the way they did that. It really was. The administrative team found out via the email link to the pre-recorded Zoom message in their inbox when they logged in for work for the day. And the operation staff, like drivers, yard managers, and pullers and such, found out in an email that came almost 8 hours after mainstream media broke the news. At 9 a.m. Eastern, mainstream media broke the news. It was 6 p.m. that night when someone I know that works for one of their facilities that's being closed, when they received their notification that their facility was closing no later than July 8th. In fact, he was there with his girlfriend buying a brand new Ford Bronco at a Ford dealer and found out that he's losing his job. It was
Wow.
brutal.
Wow. Well,
Hey, can you hear me now?
I hear you. Yeah, here's what I'll do is, yeah. So go ahead. Yeah, I can hear you. And I've got the Carvanzi Ponzi slide up. So keep going.
Well, yeah, the founders and senior management of Carvana have been in trouble before for alleged misconduct with Drive Time and their other brick and mortar dealerships. But what I find is troublesome here is it's not coincidental that the layoffs happened the morning that they closed on the Odessa deal for $2.2 billion. Because if they knew they were in trouble prior to this, the investors would have backed out of giving them $2.2 billion and being okay with it. So the stock plummeted. It's rebound some, but the stock plummeted on the news of the layoffs. Because when you lay off 12% of your operations staff and claim that your model just didn't work and you were projected for growth that didn't happen, that says we don't know how to manage a car dealership in today's world, and we're trying to be market disruptors and it's failing. Oh, and by the way, we bought the second largest auto auction in the United States. And so it's going to be like when Kmart bought Sears and Sears was successful and Kmart was failing. And then they fired the Sears management and put the Kmart guys that already drove it into the ground. And they have one store left in the United States. And so and this is my personal opinion, and I am not making stock prediction advice or anything like that, but I think that the arrogance and ego of the management there is going to drive Carvana and Odessa Group right into the ground.
What you think, Ty?
What do you think, Ty?
Well, yeah. Well, so that 2,500 employees, those were Carvana employees, right?
Yes, they were all Carvana employees. About half of them were management operations office staff, and the rest were drivers, loaders, and boots on the ground that actually moved cars day to day.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. So the article that I was talking about, I think came out yesterday. They're in trouble with Illinois.
Yes.
Titles.
So Carvana has had this model where they sell cars all across the country, but the title clerks process everything from headquarters in Arizona, and they send you an Arizona temporary tag, even if you ordered your car physically from the state of Pennsylvania and took delivery of it in Pennsylvania, you get an Arizona temporary. Well, they do the same thing in Illinois. Somebody reported them to Illinois Secretary of State, and Illinois Secretary of State suspended their ability to do business in the state of Illinois for failure to comply with Illinois' requirements to have physical brick and mortar locations, Illinois dealer license, issue Illinois temporary tags, and process the titles for the vehicles physically ordered and delivered within the boundaries of the state of Illinois with Illinois procedures, not Arizona procedures. If the people took delivery, or Illinois residents took delivery of the vehicle outside of the boundaries of Illinois, Illinois law would not apply. But because they took delivery of the vehicle within the boundaries of Illinois, they normally have assistance from loaders in the yard or other drivers. You'll roll in for your shift, and the 5 or 10 or 15 of you that are on that start time will load each other's trucks together as a team, and then you roll out the door. And it's all point to point, yard to yard, nothing in between. Until recently, now they've started moving some of their own cars, at least in the Northeast, to Odessa auction facilities where that used to be contracted transportation.
Okay, so if they're doing it themselves, that's great for them.
Yes.
But whoever was doing it just lost a lot of revenue.
Yes.
A lot of business. A lot of revenue. So I was at AHA. I got to talk, and everybody was asleep in the entire presentation until I got to the point. Does anybody know that Carvana has trucks and trailers?
Uh-oh. Internet unstable again. Mic check, 1, 2, 3. When I get... Brian, your audio is muted. Brian, check your audio. Check. This is hard. You know, it's really hard to put together a show where... Oh, wait, here we go. Can you guys hear me? Brian, you are muted.
Yeah, did we just lose you? We're back now.
We're back, but you are muted. But keep going. Keep saying what you were saying.
Okay, keep going. We broke up for a minute.
Yeah. Well, we're in the transport parking lot because Brian and I know the transport parking lot is the gauge for how things are going. You can see cars coming in, trucks going out, cars unload, cars load. Who are they coming from? What do they got? They got a sticker on them.
Right.
So you see the gauge. Well, there's nothing happening here.
Nothing. It is dead.
And the two dealers I talked to, they are not happy, right?
Only
two out of how many?
And the test track is right there where people come and test the vehicles after they bought them. And I've only seen in the hour we've been here, maybe 4 vehicles come through here. Nobody is doing anything right now.
So back to Carvana and back to what are we talking about?
Yeah, it's just me here. So I lost him. I'll tell you what, here's what we're going to do. We are going to, we're going to end this meeting. That is it for today. We didn't get to kind of finish, but we got way more show than last night. We're going to go live tomorrow on Dispatching Live, but I'll be at a different location tomorrow. Still not back in the studio for a while, but we got Dispatching Live tomorrow. We got Cars on the Move on Friday. And, if we've got time, actually, we'll probably get some more into this stuff. If Brian can join us Friday. So we can finish up some of that talk. That'd be great. I want to thank everybody so much for tuning in, saying hello in the live chat, and thank you for your patience and support. Really do appreciate it. It means a lot. David, I'm sorry we couldn't get to your question. What I'll do is I will, when this show is done and archived and processed, I will send a link to Brian, and he'll answer your question. David, if you can... Why don't you do this, David, if you're still here? What you can do is you can send an email onair@yourdotguy.com. Just type that into the live chat. You can email Brian onair@yourdotguy.com. You can't even see it because of the live chat disconnected. Here it is again. Onair, so O-N-A-I-R. @yourdotguy.com. onair@yourdotguy.com. Send Brian an email. He will reply to you. I'll also tap him on the shoulder and see if he can reply to your question after the show. But thank you guys so much. Sorry again that we got disconnected. Believe me, it's my channel. It frustrates me immensely. So thank you so much for your patience, time, support. Stay with us. We'll be back. It's ATI. Stay safe and be safe out there. Sounds like the troopers are hitting it. If you don't need to be out there, park it. We'll see you soon. Thank you.